Support for The Front Porch comes from WVCarFinder.com, matching West Virginia cars to West Virginians who want to buy them. It's a service of the Charleston Gazette-Mail. More at WVCarFinder.com. And you're on The Front Porch. This week we're going to be talking with Corporal Errol Randall of the Charleston Police Department about some of the innovative ways that they've been trying to improve relationships with the community, in particular the African-American community here in Charleston. I'm Scott Finn, Executive Director. I'm joined by Rick Wilson of the American Friends Service Committee. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Scott. I'm trying not to mumble this week.
Yes, he's gotten some feedback from Twitter and Facebook.
And my wife.
Enunciate. And not joining us this week is Lori Lynn. Rick, where's Lori this week?
I think she might be in a tree stand right now, Scott, trying to get a buck. I'm not sure there.
Well, Lori, good luck. And like I said, we're joined by Corporal Errol Randall of the Charleston Police Department. He is their Strategic Planning Officer. Corporal Randall, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. I feel honored, and I'm with royalty right now, right?
He pointed to Rick Wilson as he said that.
No, I scanned the room. I scanned the room. So both of you guys. So, but
man,
thank you.
This man is a diplomat, obviously.
So recently we had a really horrific event here in Charleston. A white older gentleman who shot and killed a young African-American man, 15-year-old James Means, and talked about, quote, removing trash from the street or taking another piece of trash off the street. And it's gotten a lot of national, international attention. What I want to ask you about, Corporal Randall, is what is the work that you've done with the community that helps to build a stronger relationship and prevents some of the animosity that we've seen in places like Charlotte that had similar shootings?
Well, I tell you, we've seen a lot of examples of what not to do, right?
Spell it out for me. What are some of the things not to do?
For number one, you should not overreact or act on emotions. This last shooting with the juvenile is shocking to the soul because it's of a 15-year-old child. But what we have to do is take a deep breath, let the investigation run its course. But what's important is that we're informed. And we have a mechanism by the way of RESET. RESET is a group of local clergy who have agreed to work hand in hand with the Charleston Police Department and even challenge us. What happens is if a significant incident happens just as the recent shooting occurs, we notify our cadre with RESET, which is a more defined group of pastors who we've been meeting with regularly, monthly, and we tell them information that we normally wouldn't tell the media or anyone else because it's important for them to head off misinformation. And plus, we want to be transparent. We want them to know that here's what's going on. Here are some things that we can't talk about, and here's why. And by having that information, that allows us to take a deep breath and allow the system work properly. And they have been great. They have been awesome. Reverend Roberta Smith, Sky Kirshner, Rabbi Jim Cohn, Dr. Carolyn Stewart from the Herb Henderson Office of Minority Affairs. But RESET, RESET stands for this: restoring ruptured relationships, establishing connections, strengthening alliances, empowering leadership, and transforming our community. Man, if we can do that, we're way ahead of the game.
And you can't build that trust in the middle of a crisis. It's something that has to happen beforehand.
That's right.
Strategic Planning Officer, it sounds like you're involved in all these initiatives that have to do with reaching out to the community, getting better relationships with the community. How would you characterize what you do?
I'm thankful to have a chief that has the foresight to be able to see how this would be very helpful to our department. But what I do for our department is to look at our policies, our practices, our strategies, our initiatives, and see how they pertain to police community relations. Do they work? If not, how could we tweak them? Or do we need to get rid of them? Or reinvent new ones?
For disclosure's sake, Rick, you're working with Corporal Randall and others on this thing called the CARE Coalition. What's that about?
I haven't been directly involved in that. My coworker, Lida Shepherd, has, and a bunch of people I know. And I think I think it's a great thing that Charleston Police Department has done, reaching out to the community. There have been all these stories around the country about tragic conflicts between police and the community, and especially the African-American community, and getting out in front of it and developing an ambitious, proactive program that includes training, a youth task force, helping people reenter, transparency. I mean, it's just this is a big deal.
What is the purpose of this CARE Coalition then? What's it trying to do?
Well, you know what? Let's just say simply checks and balances even. We want to be better. We want to learn. And being able to be engaged with the CARE Coalition is awesome because it allows us to be able to listen and learn how to work together. We used to go to community meetings, and because we're in law enforcement, we're kind of pushed to the front, and we're always seen as leaders and asked to lead things. But now we kind of like to sit at the back and listen, because when you listen, that provides us the opportunity to learn.
What are some of the specific examples of some of the things that the Charleston Police Department is agreeing to do as part of this CARE Coalition?
Well, several. First and foremost, training, such as de-escalation. What we don't want to do is carry baggage from call to call, or carry baggage from a bad incident that we may try to, or may actually bring from home. Divorce.
You know, that's really interesting, because I have a bad day and I have a lousy podcast that people don't want to listen to. You have a bad day, and that can have serious implications.
It can.
Is there any sort of implicit bias sort of training or discussion as part of this too?
That's awesome, because that's coming. Or actually there is going on now, but we're actually thinking about taking the actual test that will allow us to look at ourselves.
That's a good idea.
Yes. We're going to test ourselves, look at our results, so we can get a view of ourselves, and then we're going to shred it. We want to know ourselves how we could be better, or where we would fall under certain circumstances.
Have you taken this, Rick? Have you?
I've heard a lot about it, and maybe we should talk about what it is. I mean, it's a scientifically validated test where people can find out they may have certain biases or prejudices they're not even consciously aware of, mm-hmm. and a lot of people are really surprised after they take it.
I've taken it, and it shows that, you know, I have biases and stereotypes. And what I think people find is that everybody, to some extent, has these things.
Right. You know, I want to know, how can I make myself better? Well, that's an insight for us to be able to get that 30,000-foot view of ourselves.
We're joined by Corporal Errol Randall of the Charleston Police Department. He is their strategic planning officer. But first, so Front Porchians, a great way to listen to us is through our podcast. If you subscribe to our podcast, you can make sure that you don't miss a single minute of the Front Porch. Subscribe on iTunes, on Google Play, or SoundCloud, or go to our website, wvpublic.org, and you can subscribe that way. And while you're there, do us a huge favor and give us a review, because that helps other people to find the Front Porch. And thanks. And like I said, we're joined by Corporal Errol Randall of the Charleston Police Department. He is their strategic planning officer. You have a lot to do as police officers anyway, so why do these other things that are more community-oriented too?
I'm speaking for the chief when I say this, but there's a quote by Gandhi that says, we want to be the change we want to see in everyone else.
So give me an example with, like, Project West Invest, for example, something you're doing.
Okay, so you know, we have some neighborhoods of challenge, and in particular on the west side of Charleston. So if you want to revitalize those areas, there needs to be safety. And so because of what we do, we felt that we have some resources that we could allocate, and those being people are officers moving to the west side into these neighborhoods of challenge to establish that base of safety.
I believe you're one of them, right?
I am. I was the very first one.
Where do you live?
To volunteer. I live in the 1500 block of 6th Avenue. I'm just going to tell you guys right now, just like I tell everybody else, I have the best neighbors in town.
All right.
And so once we established our residents, we even bought homes that needed renovated to serve as examples of what could be done. A lot of these homes that are empty or that need work. Then once I got moved to my home, then phase two began. And phase two is where we offer, by way of grant funding, our neighbors a chance to do exterior renovations to their homes. Now, this is where Project West Invest kind of sprouts off into different venues or avenues, such as the reentry point. Because the folks that we use to do the renovations are actual prisoners. And I know that's unheard of, that the police department would advocate for reentry, but that's what we're doing. And so we use these gentlemen because they have skills, and they're close to being released from prison, and we want to promote that skill set and let the rest of the community know that these guys and gals have value, and they're building up the neighborhood that they once tore down.
And some of these people are getting paid to do it, right, when they get out? And because you've told me about some of the pretty inspiring stories.
Yes,
along that
yes.
line.
As a matter of fact, the two guys that when my house was under renovation, two guys from the shelter that just got out of prison did the work on my home. And I paid them. But I realized, wow, look at the skill set that these gentlemen have. As that house changed and got looked better, their self-worth rose. And it was just an amazing thing to see. So even the guys that are currently incarcerated that were using from the work camp to come down and do these renovations, they didn't know it. But when they came down, we advised them, we're paying you because you have value to us.
And also, looking at it hard-headed way, most people who get in the system come out. So the question is what? And do you want to keep rearresting them? Do you want people to get more and more alienated and destructive? Or do you want to actually help them reintegrate and get on with their lives?
We've talked a lot here about the fact that people with a felony record have a hard time getting employment. Do you think this is something the legislature ought to look harder at? Is this a roadblock keeping people who get out of prison from being able to be productive members of society?
Oh my goodness, the you know, it's the gift that keeps on giving, but in a negative way. And so there's a couple things that really stood out for us. One, just the fact that they're a convicted felon. If they've served their sentence, we need to try to give them a true legitimate shot to be successful. But they're getting out, they have to deal with that convicted felon on the end of their name, just a title. But they also have to deal with not having driver's licenses. Every job that I know of, you have to have a driver's license. So what are we doing to help fix that even before they get out? We have to change. We have to reassess all the time our approaches, and I don't know that we do that enough.
So I have a question. I'm curious about what the local reaction has been, and then I think there's been some interest from outside of West Virginia about what the department's doing. Is that correct?
Yes, there has. The neighbor's reaction, I can't say that it was 100% for it, but what this has allowed is an opportunity for them to ask questions. When we bring the guys from work camp to the west side of Charleston, even by way of pictures, you can see that there was a divide. But once they started to communicate and work together, and the citizens started to realize that these guys have made a mistake, they've served their time, they're rehabilitated, they have done things that are in prison that allowed them to get to the point where they can come out and be trusted, then we need to allow them to have a second chance.
It's interesting. It seems like there's a thread throughout all of the things that the Charleston Police Department is doing, and that's transparency and communication. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking also of the Handle with Care program. The Charleston Police and other police departments have agreed to notify educators, principals, and teachers when a child's been affected by an arrest or some other sort of violent event that the police are involved in. And I can say with confidence that doesn't usually happen. In many places, the police don't see that as the part of their job. That's constantly what you're doing in your job as strategic planning officers, communicating, being transparent, explaining things.
Well, I'll even go as far as to say this. Our mayor mandates that. And he'll always say that, you know, bad news normally doesn't get better with time. And it's true.
Why do you think it is so rare then? Why do you see such secrecy in other police departments sometimes?
You know, we thought that's how we had to handle business back in the days. And then society changes, and we have to be conscious of what caused society to change or what caused bad police community relations. And when you see that communications is a number one key to trust, then you'll start thinking about, well, let's be more transparent because that helped garner trust. And so we just have to be very conscious about that. I think nowadays and this day and time, it's what we have to have. And the community should know what our approaches are, what our culture is, what our training is.
So, yeah, I would say it's just a matter of getting out in front, A, so you can prevent what can be prevented, and then so you have that network and capacity to deal with things as they arise. And big picture is it promotes safety for officers and the community. It's going for a win-win, which I think is a good mindset. And you said something that really inspired me a while back. And I Tell me if I get this story right, Corporal. Charleston had targeted an area where there had been a lot of accidents. They're really trying to modify behavior with drivers in an area.
Yes.
And so, I mean, there was some aggressive enforcement. Usually what you'd expect is you'd write a bunch of tickets, a bunch of fines, a bunch of points. But I believe he said, look, our point here, sir, is that there are accidents here. We're not going to ticket you this time, but we really need to cool out. And it actually worked, right?
Yes. And, you know, we title that, in essence, punishment versus changing behaviors. And we tried to look at the big picture, such as what does a ticket do as far as if and mind you, we still write tickets and people right. have to go to court. But there's a big push. I know the chief has spoke about this quite often in our staff meetings, whereas if we're going to do enforcement, really, really consider giving warning tickets. What that allows us to do is go up and explain to the person that we pulled over, here's what our mission is out here. We're trying to lower wrecks. We're trying to not have people die because of crashes on the interstate. If you could slow it down, that helps us meet our mission. So when that person is given a warning ticket, it's a win-win for everybody. Because number one, we were able to educate someone who on a traffic infraction, and hopefully that will change their behavior so that they won't do it again.
Corporal Errol Randall, he is the Strategic Planning Officer for the Charleston Police Department. Thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
Rick, what's our Bible verse for today?
You know what? Can you help me out on that one, Corporal Randall? We try to do an appropriate Bible verse every time.
How about Matthew 5:9? It's one that's very popular with police. I know the gist of it. I don't know word for word, but... In essence, it blesses those officers that are out there trying to enforce the law and maintain the peace, and the Lord blesses us. So it's one that whenever you see police funerals and things like that, that's a reminder in the Bible that if I get frustrated, sometimes I'll just go read Matthew 5:9, and it really helps. So Matthew 5:9, the Lord blesses us for us doing what we do.
All right. Thanks, Corporal Randall. And you got off easy this week.
I did, yeah. I got a warning. I got a warning this week.
Rick,
right?
You owe me.
I know it.
And that's the Front Porch. Corporal Errol Randall, Rick Wilson, and Scott Finn, Executive Director here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Thanks for listening.